Welcome to Sports Connections with David Smale, a podcast that brings fun and interesting connections throughout sports. As an author and sports journalist, David has been interviewing fascinating people in sports for more than 40 years. Now here's your host, David Smale.
Adam Teicher came to Kansas City in 1993 to cover the Chiefs for the Kansas City Star. He filled that role for 20 years before taking the same beat with ESPN as part of the network's NFL Nation. He and Joe Montana arrived in Kansas City at the same time, but it's safe to say Adam's influence in this community has lasted much longer than Montana's. Native of Manhattan Beach, California, Adam is a graduate of Michigan State University with a degree in journalism. He was a freshman at Michigan State when Magic Johnson led the Spartans to the national basketball championship in the most watched Final Four game in history. After graduating from Michigan State, Adam worked for newspapers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, before joining the Star. And he's won numerous reporting and writing awards from the Associated Press sports editors. He can be heard here in Kansas City on multiple shows on Sports Radio 810, Talking Chiefs, and occasionally Michigan State sports. Adam, welcome to Sports Connections.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here. This will be fun.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. All right, I got to start with Michigan State. I was at a small college in Michigan at the same time. I'm a year ahead of you, but I remember the excitement about Michigan State sports and Michigan State basketball my sophomore year. What was the atmosphere like on campus at that time?
Oh, it was spectacular. Now, the year before I had gotten there, Michigan State had gone to, I believe it was the Elite Eight. Right. So, you know, there were a lot of expectations for that team. Magic Johnson, Greg Kelser, Jay Vincent. I mean, there was a lot of expectations on that team. And it was just spectacular. And, you know, it's, the Big Ten was so deep that year. Right. And that was the last year that the NCAA took, maybe not the last year, but it was one of those years where the NCAA took only a maximum of two teams from every conference. It wouldn't go seven, eight deep into a conference. So there was some concern. Michigan State started off 4-4 in the Big Ten. There was some concern they weren't going to even make the NCAA tournament. They had to turn it on. They won, I think it was 9 out of the last 10 to eventually make the tournament, and then they went on a run once where they were there. So it was a lot of fun. I'll never forget the night they won the championship. School was out for a spring break, but we were going to come back on the Wednesday. The championship game was a Monday night. We all agreed we're going to come back a couple of days early and watch, and that was a lot of fun.
All right, so here's a trivia question for you. Who hit the game-winning shot for the opponent in the last game Magic Johnson ever lost as a collegiate?
It would have been Wisconsin, right? I believe it was Wes Matthews, if I remember right.
That's, you are on top of it, my friend. That's pretty good. I remember that.
My memory is a little foggy now, but at the time I could tell you every detail from every one of those games.
So. Yeah, that was a fun time. And being in Michigan, I went to junior college for a year. So that was my first year in Michigan. And that's really when I caught the college basketball bug. I followed it, but that was the year I caught the college basketball bug. And I was the only one in my dorm pool to pick Michigan State and Indiana State to meet in the championship game. Everybody else had Michigan State, but beaten somebody else. So I did not predict that it would be the most watched game in Final Four history. Yeah. So for you personally, was that when you got the bug, when you decided to be a sports writer, or did it happen long before that?
No, I felt like that was a path I wanted to pursue. I mean, it was either that when I got out of college or go to law school. I mean, it was kind of six of one, half dozen of the other, although totally different paths. And I just felt like I always would have wondered what I would have missed had I not gone this route. And that's basically what it comes down to. I've never really wondered what I would have missed had I gone to law school. But I do sort of want, if I had done that and pursued that path, I really probably would have been disappointed and wondered what this life would have turned out like.
And you obviously would have lost out on all that extra income that you make as a sports writer as opposed to being an attorney.
There you go. That was another factor for sure. I knew I'd make a lot more in this business than that one.
Now, you've spent the last 27 years covering the Chiefs. I don't want to make you feel old, but was football always your passion? Or I interviewed Dick Enberg one time, And I said, what's your favorite? Because he had broadcasted pro and college football, pro and college basketball, Major League Baseball, golf, tennis. And his response was classic. He said, what season is it? So were you like that? That you followed whatever was in season, or was football always your passion?
Yeah, no, football was sort of what I stumbled into, basically. I was more into baseball and basketball and even hockey when I was younger. And football just sort of came to be. I lived in a town where there was Kansas City, where there was an NFL team. And, it's sort of hard to avoid football as a sports writer. You're going to come across football sooner or later. I think just about everybody does. And then also, I felt like the lifestyle was going to be better as a football writer than as a baseball writer or basketball, whatever it might be. A lot less travel, felt it would have been a lot more family friendly. So there was just a lot of reasons to get into football. And I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
Yeah, from a fan's perspective, because, you and I both know that you can't really be a good sports writer unless you're a fan. Now, it's hard sometimes to pull that back and write objectively. But from a fan standpoint, is football now your favorite sport? And when did it become your favorite?
Oh, it's football's fantastic. Favorite sport? Yeah, probably. I'm still a big basketball fan. Baseball has lost me a little bit. Everything seems like everything's a strikeout or a walk nowadays. I love seeing guys on base, and you just don't see that anymore. So baseball's lost me a little bit, but I never complain about a good football game on TV. I will never complain about a 2-10 NFL team against a 3-9 NFL team. I won't complain about that. It's still a great sport. It's great art. I will never complain about that. And so I guess you would say that football is my favorite by now.
Now, you've covered the Chiefs for, like we said, almost 30 years now. I'm guessing that covering Super Bowl 54 was the highlight. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Was that, in fact, the highlight? And what other highlights stick out through the years? And you've got as much time as you need to answer that question.
Yeah, it certainly was a highlight. You know how it is, Dave. I don't get wrapped up in the wins and losses. To me, there's good stories, whether the team is winning or losing. I've never been promoted or given a raise or gotten a new job because the Chiefs are winning, and I've never been demoted or had to take a pay cut or been fired because they've been losing. I mean, it's just, I'm not tied into it that way. So it dawned on me, but it never really bothered me that I never covered a team that had gone to the Super Bowl. But then I saw what that was like last year.
Yeah.
And I was really, I would have felt like I, without knowing it, I really would have missed a great experience, because to see what this town was like last year, and it's been like that at times, as you know, in the past, when the Chiefs have gone deep into a season, but it wasn't quite like this. I mean, the expectation last year, the week of the AFC Championship game, was fantastic. And if I have one regret about the whole experience, is that I was down in Miami for the Super Bowl and I wasn't in Kansas City to see what that was like. I would have loved to have seen what this town was like the moment, or in the moments after, the Chiefs had won a Super Bowl. As a matter of fact, going back a few years ago when the Royals won the World Series, I was out of the country. The Chiefs had a game that day, if you remember, in London.
That's right.
And I was over London covering the Chiefs in the morning, and the Royals won the World Series that night. And I was out of town. My wife and I, we stayed an extra few days in London. We not only missed the World Series, we missed the parade as well. So I missed all of that. So it was really fun to see a lot of people have so much enjoyment from the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. Ran into so many people down in Miami that were Chiefs fans who were having the time of their life. It was really fun to see. So not so much maybe for me, but for Chiefs fans, that was really fantastic. As far as great moments outside of that, again, I don't get so much caught up in the winning and the losing. You know, those moments maybe don't stand out so much. I remember a lot of the players that were stand-up guys. Remember Lynn Elliott missed those field goals in the playoff game. He was such a stand-up guy after the game, immediately after the game, and then as time went on, the Chiefs cut him, of course. But I kept in touch for a little while with him, and he was so gracious and so given of his time at a real bad moment in his life. That stands out to me, stuff like that. You know, gotten to know some of the players and a few of the coaches over the years. I'm still friends with some of these people. So it's just been a great ride, and last year sort of topped it off for sure.
I've got some other questions that logically follow, but I'm going to throw this one in here. When did you think that the Chiefs were going to win that Super Bowl? I was at the same watch party I've gone to for 20 years. I remember walking in saying, did you guys know there's a game? Because we always go for the food, the fellowship, the commercials. There's actually a game to watch, and we were kind of drawn in a different direction with that. But when the Chiefs, when Mahomes threw the interception midway through the fourth quarter, Everyone's like, okay, it's over. Well, it was a fun ride. I said, wait a minute. All they need is one stop. They're going to score. This game is far from over. When did you think you were going to be writing a game winning story rather than a game losing story for ESPN?
I thought that once the Chiefs came back from 24-0 against Houston in the divisional round, I said, if they're not going to lose that game, they're not going to lose in the playoffs. I mean, this is maybe a team of destiny here. I mean, if that's not a sign, what is? So, they had their way more or less in the AFC Championship game, and then came to the Super Bowl. And yeah, I was having my doubts because they were having real trouble, as you remember, moving the ball. And I thought maybe this wasn't going to be the time. But you know, when they scored that touchdown, when they went and cut it to 20-17, I said, it's happening again. I mean, this is going to happen. So I kind of rode the roller coaster on that issue a little bit during the game. But once the Chiefs scored, I felt pretty confident they were going to win the game at that point.
Was that the conversation going on in the press box?
Agree with that? Yeah, unfortunately, there's not a lot of conversation in a game like that because you've got stories going for all sorts of eventualities. Yeah. I mean, the things I've written, the amount I've written over the years that's never seen the light of day, because it coming down to the end of a game, you have to have things ready if they win, if they lose. I've had games that have gone into overtime, and I've had to write a tie game story. So, you're sort of scrambling a little bit, so you don't have a lot of time to look at it like that. But it always somehow works out in the end, and it's a miracle because if you could see how the sausage is made, it's not pretty a lot of times.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. you talked about some of your highlights being getting to know the players and the coaches. So I want to ask you, and you can have multiple answers with this. I wrote down who is your favorite player to cover, but you can say players if you want. Who were the favorites to cover through the years?
Wow. There have been a few. A lot of them, believe it or not, come from my earlier years. I think it was easier to build relationships with players back then. They sort of had a better understanding of what our job was. There was no social media, so it was they really needed the writers more than players do now. So there was just a lot of players from those early years. Guys like the Chiefs had a wide receiver by the name of J.J. Burden, who I still talk to from that first Chiefs team way back 100 years ago now. I think he was only with the Chiefs 1 year after I started covering. It might have been two. But at any rate, I still talk to J.J., one of my all-time favorites. And there's another wide receiver from that team who is now on the Chiefs broadcast, radio broadcast. Danan Hughes is another favorite of mine. And there's been a number of others over the years. Derek, from more recent times, Derek Johnson was just a fantastic person. And I didn't get to know Jamal Charles as well, but boy, did I love watching Jamal Charles play. I loved when the Chiefs were playing, when he was in the lineup. I loved going to the games because I knew I was going to get to see him do something special. So, that was another highlight, although not necessarily a personal relationship on the level of some of these other guys.
What about Joe Montana? Are you guys like this or are you like this?
Yeah, we did come in at the same time. And I've outlasted him by a few years, although I think he's still remembered by more people around here than I am. But he was a great guy. I think he really understood the role of the media. I really enjoyed D dealing with Joe when he was here. And it was fun to see that whole experience, you know, the level of enthusiasm in the Chiefs just really ramped up when the Chiefs brought him to town. So that was a fun experience as well. And I remember going out to Pittsburgh to write a big story about his background. You know, he grew up in Pittsburgh and right. talking to a bunch of people. That was a lot of fun as well. So that was a fun time for sure.
I remember Bob Gretz, who was part of the Chiefs radio network at the time, saying that Joe Montana was the singular biggest name in sports that had ever gone through Kansas City. And it irritated a lot of longtime Kansas Cityans because they said, what about George Brett? And he'd argue with them, as Bob would tend to be very good at. Compare the hyperbole. I don't mean that in a negative way, but compare the attention maybe that Montana got to our current quarterback, who's kind of getting a little bit of attention himself.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. And as far as Joe Montana, I mean, George Brett was, I don't mean he was unknown outside of Kansas City, but he certainly wasn't, you know, I'm sure he could have gone to Chicago or a number of places and sat down in a restaurant, maybe not even be recognized. Yeah. But Joe Montana wasn't that way when he was with the Chiefs. By the time he got to the Chiefs, he couldn't do it. He couldn't breathe in Kansas City or anywhere else. So I agree with Bob on that one. There's a lot of similarities between Joe Montana and Patrick Mahomes. The big difference is Joe Montana had just about all of his career success with another team. It was right. You know, the big wins were over. So he came as a ready-made player. Pat Mahomes came as a homegrown guy, and he's got a long way to go, it certainly looks like. So I feel like Kansas City, maybe more than most sports towns, appreciates a homegrown hero more than a guy who's come from somewhere else. Not that they didn't Joe Montana or somebody else who they might pick up who plays a big role, but I think there's something special about somebody who's one of theirs.
Yeah.
And certainly Pat Mahomes is.
Yeah, I think so. You talk about George being able to go out. And I remember talking to him, his wife, Leslie, what took him to her, besides the fact she was a pretty girl, is he and Jamie Quirk were shopping on the plaza. And she was probably, I mean, he was in his early 30s, maybe mid 30s by this point. She was in her mid 20s. And after he paid for something, she was engaging in small talk. And she said, "And what do you do?" And he was just so enamored by the fact that he wasn't George Brett ball player. He was just a customer, and that drew him to her. And so I think, and I don't know if she would have known who Joe Montana was either, but his ability to be incognito was important to him. Okay. We've talked about the favorite player. You've covered a lot of coaches other than Hank Stram. You basically covered all of their really successful coaches. Who's your favorite coach to cover?
Favorite coach to cover? There have been a few for different reasons, but Dick Vermeil was fantastic. I mean, he really appreciated our job. He'd sort of come from the media, if you remember. He'd done a lot of college football broadcasting. So I think he really appreciated our job and understood the difficulties and tried to help to the extent that he could. And also Dick has a lot of interests outside of football. You know, he's in the wine business, loves a good bottle of wine. So he's got some interests outside of football. And matter of fact, I do stay in touch with him. So, he was certainly a great one to cover. Marty Schottenheimer, I loved his willingness to explain the game to me. You know, I'd ask him a question. He'd go, "Hey, let's go over to this whiteboard here." And he'd start drawing stuff up on a whiteboard and explaining things. And that was fantastic. And not so much with him, but he used to be okay with me going into the coaching office. You know, some of the assistants were breaking down film. I'd go in and sit down and watch with them breaking down film. And I tried to stay quiet, but every once in a while I'd bring up a question and they'd point things out to me. So I enjoyed that part of it with him as well. And certainly Herm Edwards was a fantastic person. I really enjoyed when his time here, I know it wasn't the most successful time. The Chiefs were, their roster was really getting old and they hadn't drafted well. And it was heading into a bad period when he got there. But he was a fantastic person. Never let the losing get in the way of his relationship with people. And I thought that was really, really special.
I'm obviously not as involved with you. I do it on a freelance basis, but I like talking to Andy Reid. He doesn't, if you ask him a really stupid question, and I don't know if you ever have, I have, ask him a really stupid question. He doesn't look at you and say, like Ned Yost would, that's a really stupid question. He'll try and answer it in a way that makes you feel like that was a stupid question, but he answered it anyway. Just talk about the it's a different era, obviously, than when Marty was here, Dick Vermeil was here, but talk about dealing with Andy Reid.
Yeah, no, he is good to deal with as well. And I am the king of the dumb question, by the way. I probably ask more of him than anybody. So don't feel like you're the only one. But yeah, he is very good. And I like dealing with Andy as well. He certainly is up there on that list as well. I sort of forgot about him just because he's the current guy. I was thinking in the terms of the past. But, yeah. You know, I do want to call out a couple other players, one being Alex Smith, but also Patrick Mahomes. They suffer the dumb question or the repetitive question as well as anybody I've seen. They don't lose their patience. They are really good about staying level-headed and giving the best answer they can give under those circumstances. So I got to give a shout out to both those guys, because that isn't always the case for starting quarterbacks, for sure.
And I want to talk about those two guys specifically. And I have tweeted, and I've got a whopping 25 followers on Twitter. So I'm a really popular guy. But I have started a campaign that the NFL should name the Comeback Player of the Year award the Alex Smith Comeback Player of the Year. Is there a more deserving award winner this year than Alex Smith of that award?
No, there's not. And that number one, I'm gonna make be your 26th follower when this is over, by the way. So look for that. But that's a great suggestion, and it should be named for him, because what a gruesome injury, and we all saw the documentary that was done on his injury, and what a gruesome injury, just spectacular stuff, and for him to come back and not only play, lead a team into the playoffs is spectacular. It really is. So yeah, I think that would be a fitting tribute to what he's done and how the comeback that he's made.
And he's also just about the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet.
He sure is. Yeah. And I feel like maybe where Mahomes got his ability to, or his patience to deal with dumb questions or repetitive questions, maybe he saw that with Alex Smith, because Alex Smith was always pretty good about that. Really good about that, actually.
To me, and I've been asked this a lot, because people know I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm wearing my Christmas hoodie with the Zuba inside. But, I've been a Chiefs fan since they came to Kansas City in 1963. And so people ask me, what makes Mahomes different? And I say, well, he's got a really strong arm, but maybe not the strongest in the league. He's nimble. He's probably not the nimblest, if that's a word. You know, he's not the most nimble quarterback. You know, he reads defense as well, but is he the best? I don't know. But he's got such a combination. And to me, the extra thing is nothing phases him. You know, I've been in the locker room as he's getting dressed, ready to go into the post-game press conference. And he'll see you and he'll, hey, how's it going? I mean, this is like the best quarterback on the planet, the best at the most important position in all of sports. And he's calling you out saying, hey, how's it going? Nothing phases this young man. And he's 25 years old. Just how rare is that? You've dealt with an awful lot of pro football players in 27 years. How unique is he?
No, it's very, very, very unusual, and probably into the rare category. You know, growing up around sports, I think that's a lot to it. You know, with the dad, and he spent a lot of time around athletes, and just sort of gets it. I think he really spent those years soaking this kind of stuff up and figuring out how to do it. And he's way mature beyond his years. It really is a spectacular thing to see, I think that's a big part of why he was so good so early, is that he's just, you know, he's like a 35-year-old guy in terms of his maturity and his level of understanding of a lot of difficult things that some guys can be in the league 10 years or more and never pick up on.
Are you ever amazed by what he can do?
Yeah, still am. You know, there's still some things that he does that you say, yeah, okay, we're not going to see that ever again. You know, there are a few of those things. I'll never forget, he had a practice this year at the Chiefs had training camp, of course, at their facility in Kansas City this year. And he had one practice where there was one throw after another where it was, you know, just a little flick of the wrist and just a tiny little opening, and that ball went right through to the receiver for touchdown, you know, stuff like that. And I just walked onto that practice saying, I don't know if I'll ever see a better display of quarterbacking than what I just did. Now, it's a practice. It's not a game. The pace is a lot slower. But still, just amazing the things. He put it all on display that day.
Yeah. You talked about some of your favorites. Maybe you don't want to mention names, but did you have some either players or coaches who were difficult to deal with?
Yeah, there were those for sure. And a lot of those were from the earlier years as well, for whatever reason, there just wasn't the patience level. Todd Haley was a very difficult person to cover as far as a coach. Had no understanding of what we did, had no patience for what we did. Considered that to be a ridiculous part of his job. Just didn't feel like that wasn't part of what he wanted to do. And it showed. I mean, it showed. I mean, he would routinely show up half an hour, 45 minutes late to a press conference because he could, yeah, you know, and then just wasting everybody's time. So I really didn't enjoy the Todd Haley years. On top of that, he was a bad coach. Again, that doesn't affect me necessarily, but I wasn't happy to see him. I wasn't disappointed to see him let go for sure. So, you know, there's a coach. There have been some players over the years. I'd probably rather not go into that because they won't get a chance to defend themselves. But there have been a few players, some fairly popular players who just didn't like what I had written and couldn't get over that fact. Never did. Some of these players I get along with a lot better now that they're done playing football, believe it or not. I still talk to some from time to time, but it's just kind of one of those things. You're not going to be everybody's friend out there. I don't even try. I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I could probably pick who some of those guys on your name on your list are. I won't mention them, but I could probably pick some of them from my
years. Well, you might, but you might be surprised by some of the others. One was a starting quarterback that they had. It wasn't Joe Montana. I'll give you that. But and it's not Alex Smith or Pat Mahomes. It was one of the quarterbacks in between. Was a handful.
Yeah, careful how you do that. Okay, we talked about coaching. I want you to remember that Hank Stram went to two Super Bowls and won three AFL championships. Is Andy Reid the best coach in Chiefs history?
Again, because I wasn't here when Hank Stram coached the Chiefs, I can't say. I really heard a lot of great things about him and talked to a lot of people, and they say a lot of great things about Hank Stram. So I have no doubt that he was a great coach. All I can say is what I've seen on a daily basis for, I think this is my 28th season now, and Andy Reid is head and shoulders above any of the Chiefs coaches that I've seen. It is this thing turned around the minute he walked through the door. Yeah. He immediately built a winning culture, changed what would have been just a dreadful culture. One with a roster that had gone 2-14 the season before. I mean, he's just so solid in the things he does. I'm a big Andy believer in Andy Reid. I was before last year, even before he won the Super Bowl. So I've seen what bad coaching looks like on a daily basis. I have. The Chiefs have had a couple of coaches that had no business being head coaches in the NFL. And Andy Reid is at the other end of that spectrum. I can see why he's a Hall of Famer. And if Hank Stram was a better coach than him, and he might have been, then I would have had a ton of respect for Hank Stram because Andy Reid does a fantastic job.
I want to do a little bit more on the personal side for you. So these are real, you know, less 30,000 foot answers. How is covering pro football different today? I'm not talking about the pandemic. How is it different today than it was in 1993 when you started on the Chiefs beat?
Yeah, well, the first thing is that you get to know, I used to get to know the players so much better back in my early years covering the Chiefs than I can now. The Chiefs, there's a lot of rules that weren't in place back in the day that are enforced now to try to build a barrier between player and writer. And the Chiefs work pretty hard at that. So it's a lot more difficult to get to know the player. The other thing is social media makes it a lot more difficult. Players, it would pull me aside, and if they had a story to tell, they would tell me, because I was really their only way to get that out. Now they can tell it on social media or in any number of different ways. So, you know, that's made it a lot more difficult to build relationships and tell stories as well. So, those are two of probably the biggest changes.
I remember when ESPN first came on the air in the fall of 1979, I was a junior in college. You were sophomore in college. Did you ever think you'd work for ESPN?
No. It was a crazy story how it came to happen. I was up on a hiking trip up in Wyoming, and a buddy of mine who I worked with at the Star, who had moved on to another newspaper, saw something on the internet about ESPN hiring writers for each team. And he knew I'd been sort of looking to move on from the Kansas City Star, and he sent me this story. And he used to send me some gag stuff from time to time. So I didn't even look at it while I was on this hiking trip. I didn't want to burn my, it was hard to find service. I didn't want to burn my battery. So I said, I'll deal with this when I get home. So I get home, I look at this, and I said, holy cow, I better do a little research. So I did a little research on what was going on here. There wasn't much out there. And as luck would have it, maybe an hour after I'd got home and done this research, the phone rings, and it's ESPN asking me if I'd heard about what their project they were going to start on here with a person covering every NFL team, and would I be interested in the Chiefs? So I'll always owe Kent Babb, my old colleague covering the Kansas City Star, I'll always owe Kent a favor for putting me onto that. Or he didn't tell ESPN about me, but he told me about ESPN. So I felt like I went into our initial contact with a little background. So
yeah, you didn't, when you got the call from him, you were prepared to talk about it. Say, yeah, I've heard about that. And yeah, I would be interested.
Of course I know about that. I've known about it for an hour now.
Yeah. My all time favorite story like that is a guy named Bill Morris, who was the women's basketball coach at LaSalle University in Philadelphia. And he got a job change. He became the men's basketball coach, and he thought that was a major move. And so he's getting ready, shaving, getting ready for the press conference that day. And his wife hollers upstairs, Bill, Sports Illustrated is on the phone. He's thinking, man, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, already I'm being interviewed by Sports Illustrated. He said he ran, cut himself shaving, trying to finish, finally just rinsed it off, ran down the stairs, probably fell down the last couple of stairs. And he picks up the phone. He says, yes, this is Bill Morris. They said, for just 39 cents an issue.
So That's awesome. That's a great story.
But you were prepared for that call. Now, you're one of, I don't know how many, but you're the only Chiefs writer for NFL Nation. How many others from the original 20 years ago from that original group?
Yeah, I've never counted. I'm saying there's probably close to half, somewhere about half, I would guess, have been doing it for a while now. It's been great for me. I've had to learn different ways to report, you know, doing TV and that's been a real challenge for me to learn how to do. So, it's been a fun change, and I'm glad it came about. I'm really, I would have felt like my career might have missed something had I just stayed at the Star, but I'm glad this really came about. This has been a good move for me.
And that actually leads into my next question. How different is it, or what are the differences, covering a team for a media giant as opposed to a local newspaper? Your beat's exactly the same. You're focused on the Chiefs and how rule changes, how injuries, all those things, how they affect the Kansas City Chiefs. How different is it doing it for a media giant as opposed to a local newspaper?
Well, the biggest difference is they want us at ESPN to write for football fans who might be interested in the Chiefs, as opposed to Chiefs fans that might want to, the Kansas City Star might be writing for.
Right.
And there's a maybe sounds subtle, but it's not so subtle, that difference.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I'm looking for stories about the bigger name players and look for storylines that maybe involve them as opposed to some of the bottom of the roster players. So I'm a lot less involved in things going on with the players at the bottom of the roster, the so-called fringe players, and more involved with the Patrick Mahomes, the Travis Kelce, the Tyreek Hills, those type of players.
Does ESPN ever get tired of stories about Patrick Mahomes? Because I know that I can't turn on my TV without seeing one of his commercials or, you know, a story about him in the newspaper or whatever. Does ESPN get tired of that?
If ESPN gets tired of it, I don't know about it because they're always asking me about him. So, yeah, I don't know. I suppose at some point that day will come, but I think we're ways off from that.
Yeah, I don't think it'll come anytime soon because they're still eating up Tom Brady stuff, and he's like 140. So that,
no doubt.
Okay. Now, nobody wants to hear a sports writer complain about how hard his or her job is because we're getting paid to watch sports and to write about it or to broadcast about it. How hard has it been, with that in mind, how hard has it been this year without the face-to-face contact, without the fact that somebody could tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, Adam, I got something I want to tell you. You're in a cluster of people and there is no privacy with your questions or their answers. How hard has that been for you?
That's difficult. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's been a lot. It's been very difficult and hard to deal with at times. I try to do a lot of my reporting over the phone. You know, of course, that means people who aren't playing or coaching for the Chiefs, you know, lead people, former players, whatever it might be. So I do a lot of work that way, but it's been difficult. And you're right. I don't want to complain because we're in the middle of a pandemic right now. And I just feel lucky to have a job and one I still really enjoy and everybody's staying safe here. So I can't complain about it really, but it has been a challenge. I know not just for myself, but for everybody, it's been a different year in that regard. But again, if that's the worst thing that happens to me, it's been a great season.
Sure. Now, one of the best things, I'm guessing, one of the best things that's happened to you in the last year is over your right shoulder. And that's a book called Kingdom. I've not finished it, but I've dipped into it. I love it. I've got my autographed copy. Just talk about how that happened, how that book came to be. And what that process was like for you, because it's totally different from a day-to-day thing where you've got a deadline to file a story by a certain amount of time. Talk about the whole process with that book.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's been a few years, but I'd been contacted by some people going back a few years now about some book ideas. I never felt right about it. I just didn't feel like I had that particular book in me. But when I was contacted by this publisher, Triumph Books, a couple of days after the Super Bowl, we started talking about it. I felt a lot differently. I felt like I did have this book in me, and what a great experience it was working on this book. They contacted me a couple of days after the Super Bowl, and we talked about how the book was going to go, and they gave me a lot of leeway. I told them I thought it was hard to write about the 2019 Chiefs without talking about the previous 50 years. I felt like couldn't tell the complete story without going into how difficult it was to be a Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
And for a lot of those years, and you know, not always bad teams, but it's not like they were the Cleveland Browns for a lot of those years, but you know, they would tease and disappoint and tease and disappoint. And it was hard to be a Chiefs fan, and their refusal, just their staunch refusal to go get their own quarterback and make him their own. It continued to set them back. And, you know, the first time they really tried, you know, Pat Mahomes is the fourth quarterback the Chiefs have ever drafted in the first round. One of them hardly ever played. The other two were in and out of the lineup, but never really got any kind of commitment. At the first sign of trouble, they were back on the bench, never committed to him. The first time the Chiefs drafted a quarterback and committed to him, look what happens. Makes you wonder, would they be working on a 50-year Super Bowl string had they been committed to drafting their own quarterback? So anyway, I felt like I had to tell that story. And I did in the book, but there's certainly a lot about the players and the things maybe behind the scenes that went into the 2019 season. So it was fun to work on, and I felt like it was a great professional challenge. You can certainly identify with that. I'm used to writing things, shorter things, daily things. This was a project I took a lot of time on, and but it was fun to do, and I'm really glad I did it.
What kind of feedback have you gotten? Any from the players, coaches, anybody currently with the team, and as well as people that were on the team in the past?
Some of the management of the team, Clark Hunt, for instance, had some nice comments to make about it. So, yeah, there have been some of the Mark Donovan, the team president. So some of the members of the front office have had some nice things to say about it. So it was good to hear their feedback. But, hey, when you win a championship, people are going to say good things about you, right?
Yeah, for sure. All right, we'll wrap up with this. I know that the book's available on Amazon. It's available in local bookstores. But from personal experience, I know you don't make as much money as if they buy it directly from you or from the publisher. So where's your favorite place for people to order the book? And can they get an autographed copy that way, or do they need to contact you directly to get an autographed copy?
Well, my favorite bookstore in the world is Rainy Day Books in right off the plaza in Kansas City. And I think that's a great place. They'll sell it online. I'm not sure if they've opened up their store quite yet, but okay. If they have, they'll be happy to sell it to you there. I love Rainy Day Books. You can also get it through the publisher, Triumph Books. I'm a big fan of there as well, triumphbooks.com. As far as the autographed copy, I know when the book first came out, I signed a number of copies at Rainy Day Books, but you had to go through them. I'm assuming they've sold out of those now, but I also signed little stickers that can go in the book that would have my signature as well. But if you tell anybody who contacts Rainy Day and says, hey, can I get this copy autographed? I'd be happy to do that through Rainy Day. They can set that up. So I'd be happy to do that through them as well.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Adam, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. I'm looking forward to hopefully next season sitting near you in the press box again, and being able to crack jokes. You know, they say no cheering in the press box. We can certainly laugh, and look forward to doing that again, seeing you at training camp. But thank you very much for joining us, and I wish you the best.
This was fun, Dave. Thanks so much, and all the best to you as well.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smale. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smale and his work by visiting davidsmalebooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.